B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Dean and Dave from Theory of a Dead Man are my guests today in the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. We talk about their new record, which will be dropping next year. Is there any cover songs on it? Outside musicians. They also talk about the songwriting process of Tyler Conley and what he's singing about on this album.
I think he just he's an observer of what's going on in the world today. I know some of the issues that we bring up is domestic dispute, domestic violence, and that sort of stuff.
We talk about former members of the band, the way that they've changed their name to just pretty much Theory, as well as playing all around the world in a rock band.
I think it's still a little mind-blowing. I mean, it feels totally normal, and then all of a sudden you're there, and you see, like, a huge group of people, and you're in St. Petersburg, Russia, and they're, like, running along with the train while your train leaves, and you're like, yeah, this is pretty crazy.
What shows are they streaming? Stanley Cup predictions, shocking bands they like, and more with Dean Back and Dave Brenner from Theory of a Dead Man today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Yes, thank you so much for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. It's Meltdown back at it along with Al Beck. What's up, dude?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good. We got some rock news coming up here. We'll talk about the Bay City Boys. I guess that doesn't sound right. The Bay City Bashers. No, the Bashers by the Bay. Oh. No, that's not right either.
Metallica.
We're going to talk about Metallica. We'll talk about those guys coming up here in a little bit. Maybe a little GNR information. What else you got?
How about some Kurt Cobain? A little goofy thing sort of happened with him.
I was thinking about this. Actually, I talked about this on the radio yesterday. It's like, can you imagine a world where Nirvana would have kept going? I mean, like if Kurt had not, killed himself.
Yeah.
I mean, that was 25 years ago.
Well, this is what happened is a little glimpse into like pre-Nirvana exploding a little
bit. Okay. All right. What else?
How about Rob Halford getting into the Christmas spirit already?
Yeah, all right. We don't need any jingle bells right now, so.
Well, you're going to get it.
All right, we'll talk about that as well. As well as, I don't know if you know about this, Al, but I saw your five questions in the...
company newsletter.
Yeah, we have the company newsletter, and Al Beck submitted five questions. Well, and so we'll talk about the answers here.
Wonderful.
And
I had no idea this was coming.
Yeah, so anyways, that is coming, by the way. Yeah. after we talk with Theory of a Dead Man, how about I run into these guys over the weekend here? They're playing in Southeast Michigan at this festival. It's really cool. And as I talk about in the interview, I got to meet one of my guitar heroes, Brad Gillis.
Nice.
Not because of Night Ranger, although I like Night Ranger, because he played on Speak of the Devil from Ozzy, which is, like, for my money, one of the greatest live records I've ever heard. And also, it's kind of like this album that bridged the gap between the death of Randy Rhoads and Ozzy's next solo record. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where it's like, Ozzy was in, like, just going off the rails and drinking and shaved all his hair off. And, like, there's a picture with Brad Gillis playing at some, apparently, I think Rudy Zarzo told me this story one time where it's like, Ozzy had gone out for the first song on the stage after he'd shaved his hair off. They're playing some stadium. It's like in Houston or someplace, and it's super hot. And Ozzy, of course, starts sweating profusely and finally just rips the wig off and throws it in the crowd or something. And so he did like that tour, like, without the wig on. And I saw a picture on Brad Gillis's it was a Facebook or his webpage or something, and he's playing and he's on the the right hand side of the stage or whatever, and there's Ozzy in the middle and, like, hair just sprouting out all over the place. So Ozzy was kind of a mess, but Speak of the Devil record's so killer and such a part of my youth that I thought, man, that's so cool. So anyways, Dean did from Theory of a Dead Man did text me. He texted me a little while ago. He's like, dude, we forgot to talk about Double Elimination on Big Brother. Dean is a huge Big Brother fan.
I did not know that.
Yeah, on CBS. In the past, we used to text back and forth because I used to watch it too. Mm-hmm. But I have to admit, it's been such a busy, hectic summer. I can't put in the 4 or 5 hours a week it takes to watch this show.
Right, yeah.
So anyways, I just said, no, dude. I said, I've kind of punched out. And he's like, Yeah, we didn't get to talk about double elimination. That's right. So,
well,
double eviction,
yeah.
I guess it is.
Yeah. So, well, there you go. People turning off the podcast right now because they know they're not going to get that.
That, right, exactly. So, anyways, I'll get a chance to turn it off after we talk with Dave and Dean. Yeah. But here they are today. It's the guys from Theory on Talking Rock with Meltdown. Hey, guys, thanks for taking the time to talk with me. We got Dean. Dean, you there?
I am. What's going on, Meltdown?
Hey, not much, man. Dave, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
I was with one of your guys' heroes, I'm sure, last night, Darren McCarty.
Oh, yeah.
Lead singer, Grinder. Around.
That's right.
Yeah, back when he was playing a bunch. I mean, is he still playing?
You mean in his band?
Yeah, music.
Yeah, he's actually put his band back together for like some weekend gigs coming up this weekend. But yeah, Grinder is exactly right, Dean. Very good. Did you guys ever see him play?
We played with them one time. Yeah, no, it was good. It's been a long time, but I do remember playing a gig with him.
Where was that at? Do you recall?
No, I wonder, Dean, if that was in if that was like Windsor, Ontario, because I remember the Baileys or something coming by.
Huh?
Oh, it could have been.
Yes.
I wondered if it was maybe over on the other side.
Well, I bring that up because Dave, of course, you had the Proby shirt on the other day. Was it Give Blood, Fight Proby or something? Is that what it said?
They didn't say anything. It's just a Proby.
Okay.
anytime
it's a good motto, though.
Michigan, I mean, that's pretty much part of my weekend warrior bag anyway, because that's one of my favorite shirts. But anytime we're going to Michigan, I make sure to have my Proby shirt ready to go.
Yeah, I've become really good friends with Danny Probert, his widow, and her family and stuff, and they're really good people. We do that motorcycle ride every year, so maybe if you guys are around next year in June, you can join us. But great people. I never had a chance to meet Bob, and people find that crazy, but it's like I was just never around him. He wasn't in the country. He wasn't allowed in the country for some of the time, and then, of course, he was playing for Chicago and stuff when I first got here. But did you guys ever have a chance to run into him?
Yeah, we did. We did the Junos, which is like the Canadian Grammys,
right,
one year in Calgary. And they always do the Juno Cup, which is a hockey game with musicians versus ex-NHLers and stuff. And he was part of that team. And, we got to hang around him a little bit. And, yeah, he was just a gentle sweetheart. He was a cool guy.
So, wait a second. They put him...
Then Dean dropped the gloves with him. It was crazy.
liquid courage, you know? I thought I could take it.
I don't want to fight. And he's like, Dean, I don't want to fight you. And Dean's like, take it, buddy.
Yeah, crazy.
So no they had the musicians on one team and the former NH. That doesn't seem fair.
It's not at all. Well, we get toasted every year.
To even it up, they give the NHLers a musician goaltender. And then they usually get the musicians like some kind of amazing goalie if it's not an ex-NHLer. We had like a, what was that, female Olympic goaltender that was in that?
Yeah, Sammy Joe Smalls.
We had one
of the Canadian Olympics.
Yeah, that's cool. I've played a lot of hockey in the past with Manon Riom. You guys remember him or her?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Tampa Bay, right?
Yep, she played, I think, a period for Tampa Bay. Yeah, like, that was like, boy, that was like 25, 28 years ago or something like that now. So, man.
Yeah.
Time flies. Hey, speaking of that, you guys have your 7th record coming out. I mean, can you believe that?
No, it's crazy. You know, go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, in a weird way, I kind of can believe it because, I feel like we... Really, you know, from day one, we've always had this mentality that we wanted to be a career band, that we didn't want to just come and go, and that we were willing to put in the time and the work. And I think it's been a lot of time and work, and it's been a lot of adaptation and making sure that we can stay relevant as a band. But I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, we worked for this and aimed for this. And so in this weird way, well, I still think it's a blessing that I'm not totally surprised. I feel like Tyler's a better songwriter today than he ever was, and there's no reason why we shouldn't still be around.
What are you going to say, Dean?
Oh, I totally agree. I just, to me, it's more just an amazement of how the time has passed so seems quickly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's like almost 20 years, so it's pretty wild.
Yeah, when did the debut record come out? What year was that?
02.
02.
2002? Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you got a couple years, and you can do a 20th anniversary.
Yeah. Not ready for that reminder yet. No.
Coming up here at the end of the month.
We look younger now than we did then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Coming up at the end of the month, it's my 30th year in radio, if you can believe that. So.
Wow.
Weird to think. Damn. But so you mentioned Tyler's become a better songwriter. So this is probably an obvious question, but does he pretty much write all the songs, or do you guys get together and toss around ideas? I know before we've talked about this before, we should remind everybody now that Dave, you're in Chattanooga, and Dean, you're in Vancouver, right?
Yeah, that's right. We're spread out all over the place.
Yeah, we're all over. I mean, Tyler's been the principal songwriter for the band, you know, since the beginning. And I think that's kind of natural for a lot of singers to be singing words that they write. And I think it's easier for them to, you know, be able to sing them emotionally. And so, you know, Tyler, he definitely writes pretty much everything. I mean, when we get in the studio, everybody's ideas are heard and we try all kinds of stuff. And, you know, and who knows what ideas work and, you know, so I think musically a lot of stuff can change once we get in the studio. And definitely Martin, who we just did our second record with, he also did Wake Up Call. He's very much like he doesn't want to stick in the demo world. He wants to try different things, and he's just like throwing out. He's just trying, you know, he's shouting out, "Hey, Dean, try this. Dave, do this on the guitar." And, you know, so he's just orchestrating different ideas. And so when we're in the studio, anything can happen. But definitely the songs are kind of coming into the studio from Tyler's, you know, demos that he builds at home.
Now, the last record, I think I was reading that, like, Tyler was kind of tapped out on the guitar, and he started working on the piano. And so does he write most of the music, too, or is it just like what you were saying, that when you guys kind of get together, it just kind of flows?
Yeah, I mean,
the music is the bones of the songs are there when we get into the studio. But I think I know for me, he doesn't write a lot of bass stuff or anything like that. So I have time to come up with some ideas at home. And I know with Joe, too, with the drums, I don't think Ty does too much drum stuff. He lets Joe kind of explore some ideas. So, but the main song ideas are all there. And then, you know, we get to sort of play with it ourselves. And then once we get all in the same room, it's fun to sort of just flesh it all out.
And so the guitar solos and stuff like that and the bass lines, you guys write both of them. Dave, you can start.
I mean, it's not a whole lot of guitar solos.
Yeah.
I think this record, Tyler played one guitar part in the whole record. And I don't even know for what reason, except for that I just kind of said, "Hey, do you want to try doing this?" And he kind of, I think, was very excited to not be playing any guitar. Yeah, so I played all guitar parts, and you know, some of them were already kind of figured out ahead of time, and I just played them as they were because they were just the right parts, and other parts were different.
Yeah, what about you and your
every song's different.
What about you and your bass lines there, Dean?
Yeah, I think sort of the same thing. The songs are there, and I like coming up with some ideas in different fields and that kind of stuff. And sometimes they work, and sometimes they don't. I know sometimes. There was a couple songs where I had some stuff and with the producer and stuff, it was like, yeah, okay, we need it to calm down a little bit more and more simple. But, I like to have, you know, more options, and then, we can cut stuff if we need to.
Now, Dean, tell me about the, first of all, do you guys have a name for the new record?
I don't know if we've settled on anything.
Okay.
But, yeah.
So tell me, Dean, I'll let you start. So tell me about the flavor of the new record and what it might be, you know, why or how it might differ from past records.
I think musically it's a lot along the same vein as Wake Up Call. But I think like Tyler's really tackled a lot of more darker lyrical content. And so I think there's a lot more emotion involved in this record.
Now, you say darker because I think you guys were saying something similar in the last record. So what kind of stuff is he talking about in this record?
I think he just he's an observer of what's going on in the world today. I know some of the issues that we bring up is domestic dispute or domestic violence and that sort of stuff. And
you know, it's not as, I think the first record was, not the first record, but last record, Wake Up Call, was had a little bit more cheeriness and a bright feel, where this is maybe a little bit darker.
Okay. Dave, what are your thoughts on the new material?
I remember being in the studio one day and Martin was talking about something and he said something along the lines of, you know, that this album is courageous, that it's really brave. And I totally agree because, you know, every record I kind of get like a little more pride in Tyler because he pushes himself and he wants to always improve and tackle something he hasn't done before. And, you know, he really pushed the envelope and tackled some tough subjects like Dean said, like domestic violence, racism, you know, and I love that because, you know, we're like you say, 20 years in the business and, you know, we don't need to sing about bad girlfriends and lowlifes anymore. We've done it. And I think he's excited to kind of take on other stuff. He's got a really great ability to also sometimes just like put it on a platter for you to digest and not really seem like he's hammering it from one way or the other. It's really, Tyler's a really intelligent guy, so I really think the lyrics, you know, on this record are the best they've ever been and tackle some really, really tough subjects. And so I always give him kudos for that. And I agreed with Martin that this is a really brave, courageous record for us and, you know, for him lyrically.
And Dave, we'll stick with so Martin's their producer now. You guys recorded this at his studio in London, is that right?
Yeah.
Just like last time.
Yeah, same studio. We went, you know, we chatted with you a little bit of Abbey Road, and we had been there and spent a few day there just sort of touring it and checking it out. But, yeah, we didn't do the record at Abbey Road. We did the record at Kensaltown Studios, Martin's studio that he purchased, I think, in between it during the last record and this record.
Yeah. And so, Dean, did you find, like, when you guys went into record, I suppose there's a little bit of, like, a familiarity between you guys then? You guys kind of had a thing going. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The last record, Wake Up Call, with them, it's a really different recording process that Martin uses. There's a lot more sort of jamming and organic ideas flowing and stuff, where before we're used to sort of a more structured environment where we knew what we were doing every day and came in prepared, where now doing the second record with him, we sort of knew what to expect in that way, is that you didn't know what to expect. You know, every day was going to be different, and just to go in and have the ideas flowing and be ready for that.
You find that the same thing, Dave?
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. In fact, I remember feeling like on the last record there was, it felt like a 2-week feeling out process. It wasn't even just like a little process. It felt like a third of the time making the record, we were figuring it out. And then this time it was like day one, we walked out of there with, it wasn't just like setting up stuff. It was like day one, we walked out of there with gold. And I was like, man, this is going to be good. And then we were 4 weeks in, we were feeling pretty much finished with the exception of just polishing a few things. So it was really an interesting sort of flip-flop where there was just no real time to get to know each other. We just picked up right where we left off.
Now I'll ask both you guys this, and I'll start with you, Dean. So what kind of I ask this of musicians a lot, but what kind of pressure do you put on yourself when you guys are putting out new music? I mean, do you feel that?
To a certain extent, you want to make sure that you come up with a quality product. But I don't think anybody works well under pressure. So I try not to put too much pressure on myself. There's a level of confidence in myself and with the band, like the other guys too. I know that we're going to work hard and come up with something special.
Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Dean. I don't think pressure is really the right word, maybe, because you definitely are not putting pressure on yourself. I mean, I think that, for Tyler, I think he puts himself under the gun to start writing songs and stuff at a certain time, and it probably takes a lot out of him emotionally to do it, you know, but I don't think he's putting himself under pressure necessarily, and just like when we go to the studio and we're all there, I don't feel like it's pressure, you know, and I think that, you know, we all feel like like the songs are the best they've ever been. So for us, it's, you know, you just get in the studio and you believe in the team that you've, you know, built around
around you to make a record, and you just let the magic happen. So try not to think too much, really.
Yeah. I mean, Zach Wilde said it best: when you're thinking, you're stinking. Just get in there and just let it rip, right? So,
it's really true.
So, Dave, how many songs did you guys write for this record, and how many made it?
I think it was like, is it 11 and 11? Is that
really?
Or is it 12, 12?
I think it was 11 and 10.
Wow.
Maybe 10.
Yeah, you got that extra bonus song for the Japanese import or something, right?
Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like the past. Like, in the past, we found that the label always wants to hear, you know, like, do B-sides, do this. It's like, you know, you should never go into the studio with the intention to record B-sides. You know, the idea of a B-side is it's a track that doesn't make the record. You know, so we're kind of like, the whole idea of that, it just feels sort of counterproductive. And so the idea is, you know, here's the collection of music that we've got, and I think the label always wants to hear more songs, but we kind of just shut off to that and say, okay, you know what, we have it here. Here's the songs, let's make them count. And, you know, you can remind yourself that Metallica and Zeppelin used to put out 8-song albums all the time, and I don't think that you can measure the quality of an album based on the quantity of how many songs. Mm. So I think that for us, you know, it was just about, you know, these were the right ones, and let's make it happen.
Yeah, you know, everyone under 30 right now just said, what is a B-side? So
yeah, right, exactly.
That's the thing, too. I think people are digesting music different, too. It's not, you know, as much as it hurts me to say, it's not so much about albums anymore. It's a lot of streaming and stuff like that. So if we can do 10 songs and be back in the studio sooner, like it used to be a 3-year turnaround for us, you know, that's not a bad thing. I think that we can make shorter albums and try and get into the studio more often.
Now, a couple of final things here on the new record that's coming out, maybe in early 2020. Can we agree on that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the record, is there any cover songs on it?
No, not at the time.
Okay. Any outside musicians on it?
Yeah, we got some guys out of Nashville playing, we have a bunch of different stuff. We have some horns, we have some strings. So we have, you know, definitely some studio guys. We had the Nikolai, who we had on our last record, play some organ stuff and keyboard stuff. And, I think that's it. Like, no famous musicians. Big, well-known bands or anything.
Right, that's what I was kind of getting at. Yeah, because you guys have had outside musicians in the past doing, like, strings and different things like that, so I was curious if that was going to be some of the same thing on this record, too, then.
Yeah, there's definitely
horns. Yeah, go ahead. Horns got stuff and...
Yeah, horns.
We had one guy, he did sort of... the guy kind of do, like, almost a gospel choir stuff, too.
Okay.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah, I have to remind everybody once again, you guys are in different parts of the world, so you guys can't see each other. So, I'll start with you on this one, Dean. So you guys talked to me about this before, but you guys wanted to try to do something around the name Theory of a Dead Man. And now it's kind of just like really Theory. So what was the thinking behind going with Theory and not like going with, like, for example, Dead Man or TOAD or something like that?
I think, like, even throughout the last half of our career, people have shortened our name in casual talk, like Theory. When people refer to us, it's always sort of been Theory. And I think it was a conscious decision sort of around a wake-up call where our sound was changing a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. So I think it was something that, you know, would maybe grab attention to the new sound with a bit of a change of name.
What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think being at it. I mean, I think, you know, it's almost like the Chili Peppers. Somebody used that as an analogy before, and I was like, yeah, that makes sense to me. You know, it's like you say, so many people, nobody calls us the Theory of a Dead Man. Like, it's just, it's too much. Nobody has time for that paragraph. So, you know, I think we're just sort of giving everybody the out. And, you know, you can just go with Theory. It's a little easier.
Yeah,
there you have it.
You know, it's funny. I'm over the summertime, I saw Slash, and I met your old boy Brent Fitz there. Man, what a great guy he is!
in the jam. You should check out his Canadian band, Took.
Yeah, Took. Of course, it's called Took, right? He's got a. I'll tell you what. He's in Slash's band, and what's the bass player? Todd Kearns. That guy is. He's a good bass player, but he's also a great like singer and stuff. You guys seen them play?
Man, Todd Kearns had a couple great bands in the 90s, Canadian bands, Static and Stereo and Age of Electric, that he fronted those bands.
Okay.
That guy is a super talent. And if you ever want to go back and listen to some good 90s bands, two of those are awesome.
Yeah. Hey, yes.
I remember seeing Big Wreck in Vancouver. And, for one, he's an amazing talent in himself. But, they were opening Dean. Which one? What was it? Which Static and Stereo? What was the other one called?
Age Electric.
They were opening, and man, he stole the show. He was so good. I could not believe how good he sounded. He stole the show. I thought that you nailed it. He was just so talented. He could sing circles around anybody. I was blown away.
Yeah, you just mentioned Big Wreck. I actually bought a Big Wreck album on vinyl not that long ago because I'm like, I got to have a little bit of this. Yeah, so, hey, speaking of Canadian bands, so people may or may not know, but you guys kind of got your start. Chad Kroeger kind of took you guys under your wings. Am I stating that correctly?
Yeah, at the beginning, yeah, he was the one that sort of discovered us and shopped us for a record deal and I guess made him decide to start a record company.
Okay, so are you guys still in contact with Chad at all?
No, haven't talked to him in years.
Really? Okay. I was just curious if you had. They played here last year, and man, they're pretty good in concert. There's no question. They put on a great show, and they, you know, people can say what they want to. A, they're some of the nicest guys around, and B, they just write good songs. I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed.
So, you guys are going out on tour. You're heading. You're going to do some dates here in America. Then you're heading back to Russia. Now, was the last time you guys went to Russia? The first time?
No, we've been like three times.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I maybe because all these years now with Instagram and whatnot, I kind of remember I think the first time you guys were excited to go to Russia. I thought it was recently, like
meltdown,
in the last
meltdown. Yeah. We're huge in Russia.
Although we're going to be playing Ukraine for the very first time.
Okay.
We're playing Kiev, so that's new for us. We don't know what to expect. It's pretty crazy what's the nuclear disaster that happened over there?
Chernobyl.
And now that's all that huge TV show and everything. So, a couple of the guys are talking about maybe showing up a day earlier and going and touring the site. But I think I might keep my distance.
Well, I'll start with you on this one, Dave. So you guys have been touring for almost 20 years now. I mean, is it mind-blowing or is it kind of just normal now that you can go around the world and people come out and see your band?
I think it's still a little mind-blowing. I mean, it feels totally normal, and then all of a sudden you're there, and you see, like, a huge group of people, and you're in St. Petersburg, Russia, and they're, like, running along with the train while your train leaves, and you're like, yeah, this is pretty crazy. So, you know, there's parts of it that seem very normal now, but it still is very cool and very exciting on a daily basis when you're touring. You get daily reminders about how lucky you are to be making a living playing music.
Yeah. What do you think, Dean?
Yeah. It's a funny story. The first time we went to Russia, too, we really got a feel of how the internet and stuff it can help bands because, you know, we never really promoted ourselves over there, never been over there before. And so our very first show, we're playing Moscow. And we're about three quarters way through the show, and the whole crowd starts chanting, "Say goodbye, say goodbye." And this is a song we've never played in concert for probably 7 or 8 years. And we all kind of just looked at each other like, ooh. So we were totally ill-prepared. We couldn't play our own song that the whole crowd's cheering for. And we basically had to promise them that we were coming back. We'll learn that song.
We will learn how to play it.
We will learn how to play our own song. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's funny because I know that all of us have kids and stuff. And sometimes I think to myself, you know, I'm drinking with this rock star or going on stage and doing this or doing that. And you guys do that to the nth degree. And then you go home to your kids. It's like kind of a weird thing that it's kind of a weird world that we all kind of live in a certain way.
Absolutely. There's two different worlds. There's domestic Dean and then there's road Dean. Like I just took my daughters to school this morning and made the schoolyard small talk with all the parents. And now I'm going to get prepared for touring America.
I call it the light switch life, because you literally, like, on your way out the door, you get in the garage and you hit the switch, and it's like you just go to the airport and you're different Dave. You're back on tour.
Yeah.
And, you know, your focus has to change. You know, it was much fun as it is, and it's amazing to be on the road and stuff, and it's as challenging as it is to be away from family and stuff like that. You know, you just have to focus on the task at hand, and that's the way it is. You hit the switch and get into the new role. And then, like you say, you come home and it's the same thing, like with Dean. You know, you hit the switch and then I'm dropping my kid off at school. I got swim lesson after this call, and you know, it's just life goes on.
So let me ask you guys about this. I'll start with you, Dean. How do you keep it fresh on the road? I mean, after all these years of touring, like what you know, keeps you going on the road?
I mean, the shows are always a big thing. Super excited. I think the new tour, we're going to be playing a new song, probably the first single that's going to be released shortly. So it's exciting to play some new music. And then days off, we're getting into golf, and look forward to getting on the golf course when we've got some southern shows down in Florida and such. And, you know, helps clear the mind, too.
What about you, Dave?
Yeah, so I keep it fresh by keeping it exactly the same. That's how I like it. You know, we'll be doing a lot of, get the new NHL, EA Sports, NHL hockey game, whatever year is current. You know, we'll get out the PS4 so we can play some hockey. And, you know, I think for us, we just enjoy each other so much. And, you know, we've been off for so long. You know, you get on the bus, I don't think you need to really, there's no challenge in keeping it fresh. I think we'll all be ready to go and ready to support a new record. And you know, when you start touring again after a hiatus kind of for making it like a start a new cycle, I think it's like the most exciting time to hit the road, because you're proud, you're excited. You want everybody to hear what you've got. So you've got the secret that you can't wait to tell everybody. So I think it's just, you know, we're all really looking forward to getting back on the road, and I don't think we have to try too hard to keep it fresh.
Yeah, you know, it is funny because, like, you just mentioned something that I see from you guys all the time. You guys are really good friends, or at least that's what it appears to when I see you guys. Dean, why don't you comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes it feels like if I'm home 2 or 3 weeks, I miss the guys. I miss them. I want to be out there. And so I look forward to hitting the road, and not just the band guys. We've created a great family of crew members, and you know, it's a lot of fun. We have a lot of great personalities, and we mix well together, and it's a brotherhood out there.
Yeah. You think the same, huh, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, we all know each other's best and worst traits, and, you know, you get to the point where you're willing to joke with yourself about it, you know, those kinds of things. And you tour down a tin can with, you know, 12 guys for 6 weeks. It can be tough. We've seen bands just, like, hate each other's guts on tour, and I can see how it can happen. So I think we do have something special in our band, and the ability to just enjoy each other's company and laugh off the humor and never take anything too seriously. And, you know, it's like siblings, like these are the brotherhood. We all keep each other honest and we keep each other grounded. And through doing that, you know, we all just work hard and know that we all have the same goal in mind.
All right, a couple of fast things here for you guys, then we'll cut you loose. I'll start with you, Dave. What's the band that had the biggest impact on you growing up as, like, a teenager or whatever?
Alice in Chains.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, same thing, Dean, or what?
Yeah. Guns N' Roses was the band for me that really wanted me to get on stage and do this.
That's right, GNR. Go ahead, Dave. You're going to say something?
Well, for me, it was Alice in Chains. Like, I loved so much music, but as soon as I heard Alice in Chains, I was like, hearing it isn't enough. I need to know how to play it.
Right.
So that's when I started, like, picking up the guitar and trying to learn how to play these things, because I always felt like Jerry, you know, I heard so many people play and shred and do this and that, and then I heard Jerry and I was like, man, this guy is making that guitar just cry. And I loved it. It was like he could just express so much emotion. It was like his guitar was speaking to me, like, words, you know, just as he was just as sad as Lane was. It was awesome. And so, yeah, that was the band for me. I just started playing it and found other people that were into that. And we just started playing Alice in Chains songs.
Yeah, I love Alice in Chains as much as you guys do, as you know. And it's like, I just interviewed Jerry Cantrell a few weeks ago, and Jerry Cantrell's laughter is so contagious. Have you guys met Jerry?
Yeah.
I mean, they call it the Woody Woodpecker laugh. He's like,
yeah, it's funny. We were recording, I think, or maybe our third record, and somehow we got invited over to Jerry's house for a poker night.
Oh,
and, it was a pretty awesome night, pretty crazy.
Yeah, I bet the 13-year-old Dave was probably flipping out a little bit. Hey.
Well, it was three poker tables, and I got placed at a table that Jerry was not at, and I was like, man, that sucks. But I'm in a room in Jerry's house, and there's all these pictures on his wall just, like, of him and the band guys, and I'm like, this is crazy. And, you know, you just remind yourself to stay on the level, stay on the level. And then I made the final table, and I'm sitting between Jerry Cantrell and Dane Cook, and yeah, and Jerry's like, he's the small stack, and he's getting, you know, it's the blinds are about to change or something. He does some kind of weird move. He calls for time or something, like, I need time. And then he waits his 60 seconds, and then he folds, and it gets to me, and I fold. And I just looked at him, and he goes, what do you think of that? I'm like, a little bit of a dickhead move. And he just starts his Woody Woodpecker laugh and yells, gives me an elbow. And it was like, for me, it was like the moment that I just, like, I was like, this is pretty cool. Here I am bumping elbows with Jerry playing poker at his house. And then I ended up getting third place, won $600.
Nice.
So it was a good night all around.
I don't know. I know Dean was standing right there. And when Brad Gillis came up and said hello to you the other day, like, I was kind of like beside myself a little bit, because growing up as a kid, I mean, Speak of the Devil to me is still one of the greatest sounding live records ever. And it's like, that was really had a big impact on me growing up as a kid. And I don't know if you saw what happened, Dean, but I actually wrote about this on my blog, but he came over and I said, hey, would you mind taking a picture? And he's like, absolutely. And so all I said to him was, man, Speak of the Devil, like, you know, awesome or something. And he said, oh, thanks, man. And he was super nice. And it's like, I'll never forget those 15 seconds, you know, because he was just so gracious.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's still to this day, it's fun touring, and you get to rub elbows with some of your greats. And I still get that excitement when I see someone that I idolize and looked up to. Then sharing a room with them or, you know, sharing a stage.
Did you get to say hi to Brad, Dave?
Possibly. I don't really recall. That night got a little foggy.
All right, here's one for you guys. I might have asked you this before, but I'm not really sure. So what's the, I'll start with you, Dean, greatest Canadian band. What do you think?
Oh, the greatest Canadian band. It's funny, as a kid, I despise them, and as I was grown up and matured, Rush is probably greatest is hard to say, but one of my favorites anyway.
Yeah, what do you think, Dave?
Well, I'm gonna go off the board and just name something. I don't know if I could say the greatest, but I'm just gonna go with something you've never heard of. Pride Tiger.
I don't know what that is.
you're gonna have to go check it out. It's like
do your research.
Canadian band Pride Tiger. Yeah, do your research. They're pretty amazing.
All right, Dave, a band that people would be shocked to know that you listen to. What would be one?
I think people are always a little surprised that I'm a big bluegrass fan. I love Old Crow Medicine Show. It's like my favorite band right now.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you got, Dean?
It's funny, I've gotten into records and stuff lately, and I like a band like Parliament, like an old funk band. Like, that's what I'm sort of digging right now, is just some old 70s funk.
Yeah. Last show you streamed, Dean, what is it?
The last movie I streamed?
Or the last show, like the series.
Oh, I'm Mindhunter right now.
Mindhunter.
Right into Mindhunter. Yeah.
Somebody else
on
brought
Netflix.
That up. Yeah, I got to watch that. Someone else brought that up recently. I can't remember who it was, but yeah, okay, I'm going to write that down. So, Dave, what about you?
Well, it was that one. I told Dean to watch it, and he watched it.
Okay.
But I just started Dark Crystal. So I haven't finished it, but I just started that new Dark Crystal
series, which is like 9 or 10 episodes long.
Yeah, I'm watching The Boys right now on Amazon about the superheroes. Okay. You know, and I'm not a huge superhero fan, but it's kind of, they're kind of like superheroes slash politicians. It's kind of hard to explain. All right, two more things here for you. But the season hasn't even started. What's the super, the Stanley Cup predictions? What do you think, Dave? I'll start with you.
Stanley Cup predictions. Boy, oh boy. I'm not ready for this. Well, let's just go with Nashville Predators hoist the cup.
Nashville, that's a good call. I'll tell you what, man. I was super excited to see St. Louis win it last year. That was good for them, man, and awesome for the city. So, Dean, what do you got?
I think Tampa's going to be really upset what happened last year, and I think they're actually going to make some more noise in the playoffs.
All right, and of course, Stevie Y is right here in Detroit now, so you got that.
That's right.
So, and a final thing, does Tyler's pompadour ever double as a hockey helmet? Does he ever, or no?
No. he puts a helmet over that thing, man.
He does?
He puts a helmet over that.
I thought he just painted the straps on the side of his chin or something.
Nah. One time he cut the top off a cowboy hat to fit it up.
Really?
He cut we were at a state fair or something. He found a cowboy hat and cut the top off of it, so he had room for his hair.
So how long does it take him to get a hair ready before he goes on stage? The other day we saw him, and it's like all day. It seems like he's hair ready.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's got it down packed. It takes minutes.
Guy's freaking Nosferatu, man. He just like wakes. He's got his arms crossed and he sits up.
All right, well, listen, we'll let you guys go. I really appreciate the time. The new record drops in early 2020, and I see you guys have a date close to us again here at the Machine Shop coming up on November 5th. So like I was just telling you guys before we started, that my son is on 18 different hockey teams, so if I can get a night off, I'll come up and see you guys for sure. So
yeah, man, we hear it.
So all right, guys, well, thanks so much for the time. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Mel, pal.
You good, man?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Have to thank Dean and Dave for taking so much time with us here today and talking about everything that's going on in the world of Theory of a Dead Man, or is there just known now just as Theory? So, anyways, Dean back.
Streamlining.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Dean did text me back about the Big Brother thing. He says, hilarious, not missing much this year. So maybe it's a good thing I haven't now.
A blessing
watched.
In disguise for you.
Yeah, there you go. So, anyways, Al Beck is here with your rock news. And what are we going to start with here first? I didn't write anything down. So
you didn't write anything down? Let's just start with Rob Halford. Let's get Christmas out of the way.
Like, yeah, you know what? Rob Halford, we've talked about this before. I can see that he's kind of a Christmas guy.
He is a little bit of a Christmas guy, and he's already released a Christmas album in the past, but he's got another one coming out on October 18th. It's Rob Halford with friends, or with family and friends, I should say, The Celestial. Wow, I can't speak today. That is going to have like actually a bunch of classics, but he's going to have 4 original songs doing Christmas in sort of the heavy metal version.
Yeah, I wonder if, who's in the band or anything? Know anything about it?
I don't have a lot of details on that. You're asking a follow-up question.
That's right, I forgot. No follow-up questions. Slayer.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
But Rob Halford and family and friends. How about that?
Okay. That sounds fantastic.
Well, another guy who's got some stuff going on is Nikki Sixx, and he did put out sort of a tweet earlier this week, and he kind of teased some stuff that he's got going on. He's listed off a few of his projects he's got going on, like a musical. There's a book in the works. He's working with a corporation on the opioid epidemic, and then something really massive, to quote Nikki Sixx in that tweet. So what exactly is this massive thing? Not sure, but there is something else in the works, but evidently he also said that a lot of people people trying to get him to do a podcast. They wanted to see what people thought about that. So we couldn't, we don't need the competition there.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. There's too much out there already, as we've found out. Yeah. But yeah, you know, Nicky's one of these guys who just works, mm-hmm. works. He kind of reinvents himself all the time. And, you know, he did, of course, Motley Crue was like his cash cow, right? And then sure. all of a sudden it's like, oh, check this out. This nice Nikon camera I've got, or however you pronounce it. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to start taking pictures now. And then he's writing books, and, you know,
he had his radio show that we used, you know, used to air. Yeah.
Yeah, the radio show, and he had all sorts of stuff going on, and he still does. So I said to him one time, I said, man, you're not one of these guys that lets the grass grow beneath your feet, are you? He's like, nope. So no. He just keeps on keeping on. So.
I could see that guy launching a podcast. I mean, I know he's kind of like joking about it right now, but mm-hmm. I could see it happening.
He's got he is a little bit media savvy, and he's not scared to talk into the microphone. So
right.
But I don't know if that's what he's talking about as far as massive.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope it'd be something bigger than that.
Yeah.
As far as massive goes, yeah. you know what yeah. I'm saying?
I mean, could it be bigger than this podcast?
Probably not. It could not get any bigger than this.
No.
All right. So what else you got?
How about Freddie Mercury? Obviously cashing in on the resurgence of Queen since the Bohemian Rhapsody movie, which maybe I'll watch this weekend. Probably
well,
not.
I doubt it. Exactly. I already know what I'm getting you for your Christmas.
Yeah. Well, there is a box set, not for Queen, but Freddie Mercury solo stuff. So
which is not very good.
Well, there you go. But you can pick it up for yourself. It's like a 5-disc set with a Blu-ray, DVD, both of his solo albums, and it's going to be coming out on October 11th, called Never Boring.
Yeah, he would have been 73 yesterday as we record this, so.
Yeah. How about some Guns N' Roses rumors?
Yeah, Guns N' Roses, yeah, of course, it was scooped on this here podcast that they were back in the studio, at least working on some material and talking, and Slash told us that a couple months ago. Now they're looking at least releasing a song somewhere.
Yeah, so we've got rumors about Guns N' Roses. Like you said, it was confirmed, not a rumor, right here on this very podcast, that they are working on some new music. But where are you going to hear it? Obviously, an album down the road. But these are rumors that came up on like a fan page. So this is like all forum-based type of stuff. But it sounds like several members of the band had been invited to check out a very rough sort of early version of the new Terminator movie, and maybe have been approached to provide a song for this new Terminator movie.
Well, they were, you know, obviously they were in the other Terminator movie and Terminator 2.
Yeah.
And there's always that thing where, you know, Guns N' Roses was in the movie with You Could Be Mine, and they released that song on the soundtrack. But there's also that scene where Arnold is running down the hallway, and he's got the box of roses, and he opens up and pulls a gun out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's like kind of like a little tongue-in-cheek there.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
So, anyway, so what is there any release date or anything? Or
no. There's
follow-up questions.
Yeah, well, no. this one I can tell you, that's all rumors.
Okay.
So it's not even confirmed. The only Guns N' Roses news confirmed, like I said, on this podcast, is they are going to be working on some new stuff.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I know that they were, I saw Slash over the summer do, with Miles, they're doing his solo stuff with Miles and the Conspirators. And, I was thinking about this the other day. I should have just told the girl, you know, his tour manager, I'm going to go say hi to Slash real fast. But, you know, he's always busy doing
sure,
whatever.
Sure, yeah.
So who knows? So, anyways, what else you got?
Well, we got a trailer out for the Metallica S&M 2 movie experience. Obviously, actually, as we record this on the 6th of September, tonight is going to be the shows in the Bay Area for the S&M 2. Now, they are going to be recording it and doing a one-night-only theater experience on October the 9th, and they released a trailer for that experience, so you can check that out online right now if you want. It's mostly footage from the old S&M, you know, just them in an orchestra performing live. But, they obviously filmed it. They're going to be doing a one-night-only thing. You know it's coming to a home release. We don't have any details on that yet, but I'm sure we'll be able to see it at home as well.
Let's see. It's a Wednesday night, and if I don't have anything going on, I may actually go watch that.
It'd be pretty cool.
I saw, what was the movie that those guys had? Not Some Kind of Monster, but the movie. What the heck was that? We should have done some research before we started talking about it.
Yeah, I can't ask you follow-up questions either.
That's right. But it's like, that was pretty cool.
D-Han thing.
Yeah. I saw that thing in the theater when that
came
out. Through the Never. And it's like every interview I do with the guys from Metallica, I always forget to ask them what's in the friggin' bag. You know, it's like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
they got this bag on the stage. It's like, what's in the box?
Yeah. I don't want to shock you, but I haven't seen that movie either.
Oh, my God. I don't know if it's such... I'm not sure if it's much of a movie or it's like it's part concert, half movie.
Right.
Like,
kind of a blending of the two.
Yeah, actually, it's more concert, but it's really kick-ass. So, anyways, you get a chance to watch that. And October 9th, yeah, that may be a good day to go check that out. We'll see what happens. Yeah. So, what else you got?
Well, I got one final thing, yes. And this is, I mentioned Kurt Cobain earlier, and sort of a pre-Nirvana thing that happened. So, recently on Instagram, this record store in Seattle posted a photo of a find. They just happened to, moving stuff around or whatever, uncovered a royalty check for Kurt Cobain that he had lost there, left behind, something, I don't know. But the date on it was about 6 months before Nevermind was released. So do you want to take a guess at how much this royalty check was actually for?
Well, I think I saw it. Was it $26 or something?
It was $26.57. Yeah. all that check was worth.
At Kid Rock's house, he's got a royalty check framed on the wall, and it was like for some ridiculous amount, like under a couple bucks. He's like, you know, it probably took him more money to mail this to me than to actually pay off this thing. So he just framed it and put it on the wall.
Which I appreciate, because I would probably do the same thing. Yeah. I think that would be hysterical.
It's like, why would you even cash it for like a dollar or something? So anyhow, well, there you go. Hey, so before we wrap up today's podcast, I got to talk about this five questions with Al Beck.
You've got to?
I've got to. Okay. This is part of my civic duty as the leader of this here fine program.
Yeah, sure.
So we got this weekly thing that comes out every month, and it talks about like what's going on with different employees and, you know, whatever. And we get picked as, you know, employee of the month always gets picked. And I don't think a DJ has been picked as employee of the month yet, so that tells you kind of where we rank.
Well, yeah, I think one of the producers from one of the other stations was the employee once.
Not me, though.
Not you.
No.
That's the issue.
That's the issue. Okay, I have yet to get picked, and I want that. You know what? I want that prime parking spot in January when it's snowing outside.
Actually, that's a smart move.
Yeah,
start your campaign.
I'm going to start my campaign right now. I don't want to start too early, because then I might get it like in November, and it's not that snowy out yet. So I'm going to have to wait.
That's a good point.
December, I'm going to start my campaign.
Perfect.
Meltdown for Employee of the Month. Anyway, so five questions with Al Beck. So this one annoyed me a little bit. How did you get the former on-air name of Slayer? Well, I'll tell you exactly how he got it. I started calling him Slayer. Screaming Scott started calling him Slayer. Listen to his answer. It actually started when I was on the promotion intern.
Yep.
That's Slayer's true. One of my favorite bands, and I used to have a Slayer hat, and I'd wear it all the time, and people would shout out Slayer at me as I walked by with my hat or t-shirt, which turned out to be a nickname that carried over to the air when I became a DJ. I was glad to ditch the name, however, because as much as I liked the band, I always felt I was ripping them off.
True.
I've had the chance to tell two members of the band, Slayer, that I used their name on air, and neither of them seemed upset, so that's a win, I suppose.
Yeah.
Boy, it's funny, because my name is not mentioned anywhere in here.
Well, why would I mention your name?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's point number one.
Yeah, but okay. I did get a chance to meet Paul Bostaff and Kerry King, and both of them seemed okay with it.
Didn't mention me at all. Okay.
Nope. No.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert: the other four questions don't mention you either.
That is true. All right. Let's see. Do you have any favorite memories of working here at the radio station for the past 13 years?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Getting my first big laugh on stage. This should be hysterical. Back when I was doing it, he was doing a festival in a local venue here, a packed audience. The laugh was left me with a special feeling. One day I hope I'll get a second laugh on stage. That's doubtful.
Yeah.
But what was so funny that you said on stage?
I don't know, man. It was
you
like,
can't remember?
No, it was like
it
12
was that
years
funny
ago.
You can't remember.
Oh, I've had so much great material since then that
I was waiting to chuckle at what was so funny on your stage here. So. All right. What's your favorite movie of all time? I mean,
by the way, I do know I was bringing on Rat, I think, when I did that stager.
Really?
Yeah. Like Rat or some version of Rat at the time.
OK.
Yeah.
All right. What is your favorite movie of all time? That's a tough call, but Forrest Gump is on. Mm. I find it impossible to shut off. But if Forrest Gump is on, I find it impossible to shut off. That's a pretty decent movie. I'll give you that. Not my pick, for
movie.
Sure. I thought it was going to be like some sort of Star Wars movie or something.
Star Wars, Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Yeah.
Right. Complete this sentence. In high school, I should have been voted most likely to become an antisocial hermit who would definitely never do something as crazy as getting in the career like I did in radio.
Yep.
People change, I suppose.
Yep.
Okay. Is that a direct quote?
Yes.
Change, I suppose. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And final question here from Al Beck on the five questions. What's the one thing most people would be surprised to learn about you, other than the fact that you can't ask follow-up questions on Meltdown's award-winning podcast?
Yeah, that's a, you know, I don't think they'd be surprised by that, though.
Ordinarily, my answer to this question is that I'm basically a 97-year-old man trapped inside a 32-year-old body. But I suppose that that has been well-documented on the air at this point.
That's true.
I'm not an act, though. I really am a grumpy old man who watches reruns of MASH and old movies. That is true. I thought of you the other day. I was at this moving wall thing, and they had like all the MASH type vehicles there.
Oh, nice.
And then I started getting that stupid theme song in my head. That is one of the worst theme songs of all time.
Suicide is Painless.
Yeah, it's an awful theme song.
I like it.
Just like, for example, like
it calms me.
Well, The Office. Like, as much as I love The Office, I cannot stand that theme song.
I like that theme song, too.
Really?
Yeah.
It's awful. Well, listen. Barney Miller. Awful.
Yeah. This is all why we don't get along.
All right. We got to go. Give your socials.
Al Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right. At Meltdown WRIF, I posted my top three records that would surprise you that I listened to. Did you happen to read it?
No.
You
God,
son
no.
of a bitch. You don't read anything I post.
No.
That is your job right now, is to get on there at WRIF.com. Go to my page. The top three surprising records. We talked about this last week, Slayer. You should have read this by now.
Should have. Yeah. Did not. Will not.
So anyways, if you get a chance, check that out. So anyhow, at Meltdown WRIF, I've got some really great guests coming up. I've got a returning duo coming up, which is going to be kick-ass. I've got two bands from another band that are very popular around Christmas time coming up very shortly. And I've got a 90s icon who is in a very high-profile marriage that's already been on the podcast this year, but now it's going to be live one-on-one, so I'm really looking forward to that. So at least that's what I've been told so far. So.
Right. Well, you don't want to give too many details because people sometimes cancel.
But that's right. They do change.
You don't want to jinx it.
As always, thanks to Dean and Dave for taking the time out to talk with us here from Theory. And thank you guys so much for checking out the podcast, Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.